I have
current geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Current Geek, a talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Oh, man, this week we're going to take a deep dive into a very geeky topic, something we're going to do even more in depth in a new version of Current Geek coming later this year. So much to talk about with that. We'll give you a bit of detail later, but let's just say we just had an amazing meeting with the entire team. Man, I'm not sure I've been this excited about a thing in a while.
Me either. Like, we were brainstorming topics. Of course, we still want your topic ideas. Send them to currentgeek@gmail.com. Yep. Or even post them on the subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. That's not going away. But I'm pretty stoked about what we're coming up with.
Yeah, the topics, the early look at what the season will look like has me just freaking out, because it's all stuff I want to know and pay attention to and deal with. So I know you guys are going to love it. Again, more on that later.
Let me just, before we get into our main discussion topic, let me just roll this one out there. Theremin. Yeah, I guess some people think that's cool.
It's just a nice little hint you dropped there. Okay, that's a good one. But you're going to hear that and you go, what? Wait, what? But yeah. I promise you, it is so cool, that particular topic. And there's others that are like it. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's so much in there that is so in our wheelhouse, in your wheelhouse. Stuff we don't know that much about yet, but can't wait to learn about. Things we know a lot about that we can't wait to share. It's going to be great. So stay with us. Stick around. It's going to be rad. Okay, today we're going to be kind of a light version of that thinking. We did this a few weeks ago when we had our discussion about everything's better in space. And today we're going to do something similar, although only similar in terms of it's science fiction that we're talking about. But we're going to do a little Star Wars versus Star Trek. Now, Tom, very quickly here, we should probably disclaim this and say we're not talking about the usual thing, which is, what do you like better, Star Trek or Star Wars? Why is one better than the other one? Who would win in a fight, Picard or Luke Skywalker? We're not doing that. It's something very different than that. How are we going to compare these two today?
When I ran this idea by Scott, I could tell that at first he was thinking, I don't know, I want to get in an argument about which one's better. I was like, oh, no, that's not what I'm thinking about. I want to talk about how one is fantasy and the other science. Mm-hmm. And like, you can love both, or you can love one more because you like that kind of thing more. Mm-hmm. But comparing and contrasting how these two, I think, cause so much debate because they are in so many ways so much alike, but then in these very important ways veer off in different directions. Star Wars says it doesn't have to have science behind it. We can have a mystical force that unites the universe, and we can play with that. Whereas Star Trek is always trying to make the science plausible, talking about reality, talking about brass tacks, and using practicality to great effect. And otherwise, it's still like people in spaceships whizzing about and having starship fights and mm-hmm. everything. Yeah. Like, it's so similar and yet so different.
In a lot of ways, the audience is both, you're invited in both cases to explore with your imagination, the imagination of the creators, and see new things and experience new ideas, and also play with very traditional humanity type obstacles, but do it in a new format, do it in a place that's far reaching and out there and makes you think about it in a new and different way. Star Trek is especially famous for this, but I would argue that a lot of the themes that are experimented with in and around Star Wars do the same thing. They take you to places and make you take your life experience and put it against this backdrop and follow these characters in a way that you would characters in any other kind of fiction. And so in a lot of ways, you're right. These two fictions are in some ways in parallel with each other. And then there's the ways they diverge. You mentioned science and the focus on that in Star Trek, but you really could say Star Trek is almost like, hey, what if we kept going down the path we're on? Would we eventually get here? You can kind of make a through line, like, let's go with early space exploration, then let's follow NASA's growth and change. Let's see what the world does with space travel. Let's move into a new era. Okay, now we're more enlightened. Okay, first contact. Okay, warp drive. Okay, bep, 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 bep. And you get to all these things. You can kind of create a bread trail from us to Star Trek. In Star Wars' case, in a lot of ways, it's a throwback. It's like Arthurian lore. It's mm-hmm. magic in some ways. It's fantasy. It's swords that just happen to be made of light, and they don't veer too far from that kind of thing. There are spaceships, but oftentimes it's not so much about whether that spaceship would work in real space or work with whatever technology it's portraying. Sometimes it's just about whether Han Solo punches it hard enough if it'll start. You know what I mean? Like that stuff's not as allowed in Star Trek. And when they do things
making
like that,
making a Kessel run in less than 13 parsecs would be unforgivable in Star Trek, right?
It would be.
It's why it's such a controversial line. But in Star Wars, you have the freedom to retcon that and be like, oh, that just means it was hard to cut the distance because of the geography of space.
Right. It's the adventure. It's the swashbuckling. Yeah. It's the sweeping, epic, overriding story that Star Wars lives and breathes on. But at the same time, it's the visuals and the sound and the music and the kind of texture that it has that makes it tick as well. And you could argue that that's true of Star Trek as well. It's a different aesthetic.
Certainly.
Yeah, a very different aesthetic, but it's still there. So these differences are interesting because I've never really understood when people say, oh, I love Star Wars, but I can't stand Star Trek, or the other way around. I don't get it. Because to me, it's like having two versions of a thing I love getting, you know, that my back gets scratched two different times.
Yeah, it's like saying, I don't love, mint ice cream. I only love chocolate ice cream. And I'm like, I love ice cream, you know, depending on my move. I like one or the other, but, it's still ice cream and it's great. And, I think it's reasonable for somebody to be like, nope, mint chocolate chip, not okay for me. Only like chocolate. But I'm somebody who likes all the ice cream. And I'm going to eat all the ice cream that I can. In this case, ice cream being space stuff. Because my earliest memories involve both of these. Star Wars came out when I was 6. And I turned 7 while it was still in the theaters. So I always remember Star Wars existing. I just don't really have solid memories of a world without Star Wars.
Same.
And I remember always liking it. And I remember getting the action figures for Christmas and getting the land speeder that I'm looking at that's still over there that I still have, and loving everything about Star Wars, playing Star Wars out, playing the records because I couldn't go see the movie easily back then, speculating, poring over the magazines about Return of the Jedi to figure out like, who's this Anakin Skywalker and why is he listed here in the credits and everything about Star Wars. But also I remember as far back as I can remember that Saturday mornings after the cartoons were over, Star Trek, the original series came on, and it was the one thing my dad would sit down and watch with me. Because he loved the naval aspect of it, and he liked space stuff too. And so it was a father-son bonding time. So for me, the first time someone said, do you like Star Trek or Star Wars? I think I was like frozen. I was like, what? Why do I have to choose? Like, the answer is yes. I like them.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, the big the dividing factor was Star Trek was on TV and Star Wars was in movie theaters. And that's all blurred now. Like, And not just now, but certainly when the Star Trek movie started hitting theaters and Wrath of Khan was an example of it getting truly mainstream and really going for it. They were always kind of, that's how you thought of them. Okay, here's your periodic television thing. TNG continued that on. And with Star Wars, it was like, all right, well, here are your three movies. And yeah, there are books and there's these dumb specials in the 80s, like the Star Wars Christmas special and all of that, which we still loved, by the way, as kids, because we didn't care.
Oh, yeah, because it was Star Wars and you didn't have much.
Yeah, we didn't care. It was garbage. We know it now, but we still loved it. And I still, in a way, love it. But yeah, like it was just more Star Wars and that was the way you got it. But then there was Star Trek plugging away on TV and reruns and eventually a new series.
I was just as excited about the first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation as I was about Empire Strikes Back.
Same. I was
the
feeling
of like, oh my gosh, I never thought I would get more and now I'm getting more.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I saw that first TNG at the time and I remember thinking, wow, this is a lot like TOS. And like, it's just better sets, but it's really that same kind of tone.
I remember I sat down and watched that. My dad was like excited too. And I remember thinking how weird it was to be watching Star Trek with my dad in the evening.
Yeah, it is weird, right?
Because again, I didn't watch it on primetime. I was too young. So by the time I saw it, I was watching it at like 11 a.m.
Yeah. And, like, for me, I think it was, when did TNG end? Was it 94? 87, yeah, 94,
somewhere,
right?
Around there.
That was the year my daughter was born. And I remember we all got together for the finale, the 2-hour finale. And I remember being worried that she'd cry through the whole thing. But we were so excited because I thought, man, we're going to sit here and watch all good things. It's supposed to be great. All the reviews from people were strong. You know, that at the time you're getting from magazines and stuff, less from the internet, because it really wasn't one. But all of that. And then she sat there and stared at it the entire 2 hours, never made a peep. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, freaking Star Trek, Sue's the Savage Beast. Finally, we found a thing that'll just pacify her for that kind of time. Because no kid holds still for 2 hours, but yet somehow she did. But I have so many great memories tied to that. And I have just as many equally important memories for me and my fandom of Star Wars. And so for me, they've never been these disparate things that I can only like one at a time. It's not like a football team or a baseball team where you kind of pick your team, plant your flag, and then you root for them. That it never worked for me for these two properties. To me, they were always two rad things that I could be as into as the next one. And a new thing could come out, and they would have their ups and downs. There was some bad Star Wars, and there was some bad Star Trek, and some great Star Trek, and some great Star Wars. And that tradition continues until this day. You know, Discovery's pretty okay. I think Picard's all right. I think it's better than Discovery. I think nothing's quite as good as TNG. But guess what? There's a bunch of bad TNG episodes. And same thing's true of Star Wars. If you're not a prequels guy, well, then you're probably like me. You think the prequels are kind of a problem. But nonetheless, all of that stuff can coexist in my universe. I have no problem switching between the two. And in fact, love that I have those two extreme fandoms. So we don't want to, I guess that's a long roundabout way of saying how we're not going to compare these two. But it is fun to talk about the differences because, you know, for example, if Star Trek gets too mystical, and it's done that before, that's a little bit of a turnoff for me because it doesn't feel true to its lineage. Its lineage being science and theory and, you know, the food replicators are possible if these things are, if these discoveries are true, then food replication is possible. Teleportation is possible based on this and this and this. And you could buy books where they'd have full diagrams and schematics. And it would explain in like real terms how this would work. And it always hinges on, you know, a big discovery like dilithium crystals or, you know, something. There's always some thing that you have to make it work. But Star Trek always went out of its way to do that. When it made mistakes for me is when Star Trek tries to get mystical and magic plays a role in some way. There are examples. The movies try to be a little too, a little too much adventure, not enough science. But I understand that. It's a movie. It's 2 hours. You got to keep people stoked. It's a different kind of experience. You got to draw people to the theaters. I've never really faulted them for that. But Star Wars, on the other hand, would benefit from a bunch of scientific mumbo jumbo. It's better that they focus on, weird, why do they have the Force? Or that guy seemed to be maybe Force sensitive. Who knows? Ooh, weird. Those kids can make things levitate. This other guy is just a guy that smuggles stuff and doesn't pay his debts. And like, it's just a much more like down to earth, forget about the science, just go with these characters, go with the story. And that fulfills a certain need for me. And they don't, if they get too sciencey, I don't like it as much. So it's weird. I'm arguing that they're both different, but also meaningfully different. They need to be this different from each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I remember the first time someone asked me or someone said to me that Star Wars wasn't science fiction. And I got my back up immediately. I'm like, what are you talking? Of course it's science fiction. And yet the more I thought about it, the more I realized that while it is still, in my opinion, broadly science fiction, I got what they meant, which was it's kind of light on the science. Mm-hmm. And once later on, I learned the term space opera, I sort of came around to the idea of, oh, that's what Star Wars is. There's hard science fiction, Isaac Asimov, et cetera. And then there's space opera, which is oh, we don't really get into the science of it. We just benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And that's Star Wars.
Sure.
That's it also benefits from science in that we know that spaceships are possible and we know what planets are. you know, we don't think they're just orbs in the celestial firmament. You know, we actually know that they orbit suns and all of that. And it uses science for its setting, mm-hmm. but it doesn't use science in its story, if that makes sense.
Right.
Whereas Star Trek does. Star Trek makes science an integral part of every story it tells. And even when they do kind of skate over into mysticism and magic, they never lose a scientific tether.
Right.
Even, you know, Deep Space Nine, I think, is one of the ones that skated the line the best with the prophets and having the Bajorans say, well, no, the prophets are our spiritual leaders. And having the Federation personnel go, you mean the aliens that live in the wormhole, but okay, yeah, sure. Whatever right. you need to tell yourself, right?
Right.
And I thought that was one of the best ways that they played with it. And like you said, there've been other ways that they got magical or mystical that just didn't work. But Star Trek is at its best when it's working the science into it. And Star Wars is at its best when it's just saying, okay, these are the rules of the game mm-hmm. and any rules we didn't lay out, we don't have to worry about.
Right. And the parts of the universes, they treat them a little bit differently, but in Star Wars, you marvel at a riding mount on a planet and a desert planet that, you know, like a Bantha or something, and you go, man, that's just like a giant frog. That's so cool. What a weird thing that is. And you marvel at it on that level of like a really imaginative design for an alien, you know?
Yeah.
And then Star Trek land, it's variations on forehead styles, but mostly bipedal humanoids, right? Like they don't veer too far from that. And when they do,
probably because of a budgetary constraint that Star Wars didn't have, but yeah,
sure.
They make it work.
Especially in those early days. And they carried it through thematically, I think, pretty well. And so
they had some episodes that dealt with why that might've been.
I mean, even though Cardassians, Ferengis, they've got crazy head appliances that take 8 hours to apply before you can even film those people, like that's really intense, expensive effects work, but they still stay in that realm of these are humanoid. And part of the reason we do it is, yeah, sure, it's budgetary, but also there's a pretty good, you know, there are theories around that if there are beings on other planets, there's a lot of likelihood about how they might evolve in similar ways, and they'd have some differences, but they'd kind of be very similar. And you look
it's
at it.
It's not impossible.
It's right. not impossible. Exactly. And so
we don't really know, but it's not impossible.
I love that. That's the thing I love about Star Trek. In Star Wars, you don't have to give me the backstory. You don't have to explain that at one point Vulcans and Romulans were essentially separated and the dark half became the Romulans, and the ones that wanted peace and meditation and shutting down of emotions were the Vulcans. That's a really cool thing in Star Trek. I don't need it in Star Wars because all you really need to do is say, ooh, this guy's name is Darth Maul. That's badass. He's got horns all over his head and tattoos all up and down his body and his face. And he's got a double-sided lightsaber. Star Wars, that's all you need. You don't need to give me much more. Now, is it fun to get more later? Like, ooh, little hints about his origin, or one of the animated shows has Darth Maul in it, so we learn more about where he came from. That stuff is cool. Don't get me wrong. I love that. Fan service me all day, Star Wars. But the initial impact is usually just bad guy, double-edged sword. It's red. He's red. He's got horns. He's like a devil man. That's all you need. Like, it's a really, really.
I know who the bad guy is now.
Right. I don't need to know about his planet's politics. I don't need to know about the cultural differences between a Zabrakian and a.
So what you're saying is he didn't watch Clone Wars.
Road. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But see, that's my point about liking it. I really like that they do explore that stuff in some of stuff. And that's what TV brings you. So sometimes it makes me wonder if Star Trek had been a pure film project and launched in the way that Lucas launched Star Wars, would this all be flipped? Because TV has a way of drawing things out. And the most drawn out stuff in the Star Wars universe are the side animated stuff and The Mandalorian and things that are being told separately where you have to do that. Whereas in a film, it's not as important. You just have to kind of get the basics done.
Well, and you touched on that earlier when you talked about the fact that the movies tend to be more adventure-y than the TV shows. Like, it's the flip side of that, right? The TV shows will also dig into things more, mm-hmm. even if they're being procedural, you know, and Star Trek, you know, Discovery and Picard being recent exceptions, but through most of its history was not a deep story arc. It was a monster of the week that began and ended in one episode.
Right. I get a lot of heat for which Star Trek movies I like the most.
Because you like the whales one?
I don't like the whales one, actually.
Oh, see, I don't like the whales one either.
See, I think the whales one panders to people and is too much like, get it? They're here in our modern day. Get it? Here's another joke about modern life with the, here's 1984, but it's because it's Spock. It's
also,
weird.
Also, it's all on Earth.
Yeah.
And what I loved about Star Trek was they were in space. And they're barely in space in that movie.
Exactly, exactly.
So, although, I will say, when I first moved to San Francisco in 1999,
yeah.
I watched it again because I was like, oh, I live here now. Like, how much of this looks familiar?
Sure. That's pretty good. No, I understand its appeal. And there's a reason that movie did really well in theaters at the time. It's because it had a mass appeal to people that weren't science fiction nerds. But my favorites are the ones no one ever likes. And it's Nemesis. I loved Nemesis. Loved it.
Wow.
Really big fan of Nemesis. Because Nemesis, to me,
you must have really liked the Picard connections.
Oh yeah, big time. But the thing I liked the most about and there's problems with it. Don't get me wrong. It's not a perfect film by any stretch. But what I liked about it is it felt like a really good fleshed out episode of Star Trek.
That's also the criticism of it, right?
That
so
is,
if you're
exactly.
like, no, that's a feature, not a bug, then that would explain why you like it.
Exactly. The same thing goes for the third of the modern Star Trek movies with Chris Pine and everybody. I really like that third movie more than the first two.
Yeah. That's just it is Justin Lin, but it is Fast and Furious in space. It's amazing.
It kind of is. And it also adheres to the Star Trek model of here is a really good concept for an episode. It just happens mm-hmm. to be a movie and a very action packed one and a very well made action packed one. But it isn't just playing fan service. It's got new ideas to tell you about. It's exploring new stuff, and we're seeing new people and new characters and new ideas. And the first two movies played it a little safe, in my opinion. And so,
well, and that's the thing. A lot of what we like depends on our perceptions and what we bring into it. And if you come to it looking for a movie and you get an episode, you can be upset. I get that.
Yeah.
But also, when you watch episodes on TV and you're like, they wrapped it up in 40 minutes again. Everything was, you know, on knife edge until the last 5 minutes.
Right.
Well, here's your chance to not have that happen because you've got a movie length time to deal with it.
Right. Exactly. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot of the problems that some people have with modern Star Trek iteration that you don't see as much with the Star Wars stuff is I don't know that you can make Star Trek today without at least juicing it up a little bit with modern techniques of showmaking. And by that, I mean the sort of standing around your carpeted, your sort of cheesy wood-paneled carpeted bridge with Picard sort of checking stuff out and doing that slow kind of approach to a show with a much lower budget than they would have for something like Discovery. You can't do that today. I just don't think you can do it today and get away with it. You have
you can. If you pretend it's a comedy and call it Orville.
There
right?
you go.
That's
okay.
That's the only way to get away with
that's
it.
That's a great example. Okay. So that's exactly right. If you go to try to play it straight, you're going to look like you were put to sleep cryogenically in the mid 90s and you never woke up until today. And because you have to make a show with camera angles that are dynamic and special effects that are not only believable, but just a cut above and all those kinds of things. Discovery is a thing of its time. Like people who may have issues with Discovery, and I have my own set of issues with it. But overall I like it. And I think the reason I like it is because it's a Star Trek movie made in a modern time where you need to make it like this. This is how you make it. This is the kind of show you make in 2017 through 2020.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't understand the criticism of it being too movie like. That's a big thing I hear a lot. Because I actually, this is another, maybe a controversial statement, but I think that one of the greatest, if not in the top three Star Trek characters of all time is in Discovery. And I forgot his name. What's his name? Jones plays him, a big tall guy. What's the name of that character? The alien, with the gills in the back that get all up when something's bad and he can tell that there's bad coming. Do you know the name of that guy? It's like Naru or Vru. Oh my gosh. I'm not supposed to have a favorite character. I can't remember his name, but anyway, that guy.
Saru.
Gosh dang it.
And now you know how long it takes for me to load imdb.com and do a search.
Yep. I ate it up with my neurosis that time.
Saru. But yeah, Doug Jones.
He's so good. So a lot of it's on Doug Jones for being so good. But that character is so Star Trek to me. It is so everything I love about Star Trek, alien archetypes, and the thing Star Trek always does, which is they have built-in crew stuff like Data is very analytical and can't be human, so therefore there's all these things. Spock had no emotions, so it was always a weird clash between him and the very emotional Kirk, and that's what Saru is in the modern show, and he's fan-freaking-tastic. So I don't know why I went off on that tangent, except to say even with the most modern version of what they think a good Star Wars story or Star Trek story is, they still can bring in a character or something that is very reminiscent of what they've done since day one, which is a character of that kind. And I love him.
Okay. So where do you put Star Wars characters in relation to those Star Trek characters? Because I think what's interesting is we've spent a lot of time going from talking about how Star Trek and Star Wars on television have more similarities because of the form, and maybe that affected how they're perceived and how they were developed. But you ended up on saying, what I love about Star Trek is the character in relationships. And that is something it has in common with Star Wars.
Right.
Star Wars also is like good stories about the character in relationships. Luke, Leia, and Han Solo, particularly in the first movie, set the tone for Star Wars character relationships.
Right. And I think that the difference between those and Star Trek is Star Wars tends to be more iconic relationships, and Star Trek tends to be a more realistic take on those relationships. In other words, you don't need much more than Luke is young and immature and naive to what his role needs to be in the universe. Leia needs to be a little obtuse about her origins, but still sort of queenly, but at the same time scrappy and, you know, go against type when it comes to sort of female heroines. And then you got Han Solo, and needs to sort of be dismissive of everything. It's about the money. It's about the smuggle. It's about the deal. It's about his ship. And then you combine all those together. That creates great conflict, great coming to understandings, great respect between characters. And it's iconic, like an icon. You have an icon on your desktop, it's a folder, and you know it is because you look at it and go, oh, it's a folder. I'm going to go into my folder now. That's good. I'm not saying it's too simple. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that's actually a really cool thing to pull off, and I'm a big fan of it. Video games are really good at this. You just know when you're playing World of Warcraft the kind of guy Thrall is. You see him and you go, big, strong orc with orc tendencies, but some sensitivities toward the fact that it's a changing world and he's to change with it, and the old world conflicting with the new world. You know right away who Thrall is without much work at all. Very iconic. When it comes to Star Trek, for lack of a better term, it's just more nuanced. It just takes longer to flesh that stuff out. Those relationships can become iconic, but they don't start that way. You don't look at Spock and Kirk and go, I know what's going on here. You have to dig a little bit. It's a hard thing to explain, but I really think that's the difference. And I think both are equally great. They're just a different way.
I wonder if the Star Trek characters are more fully developed than the Star Wars characters. So yeah, you do need a few episodes to get to know what those developed characters are.
Yeah.
But once you know them, you know them.
Right.
Once you know Spock, he's Spock. There's not much change in Spock over the course of the series and the movies. Right. There's not much change in Picard. Granted, he becomes Locutus and he's tortured and all of that, but he's still Picard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like those characters in Star Trek, once you discover them, you know who they are. Whereas in Star Wars, they grow.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke... And yes, you're right. He's iconic. He's the innocent, you know, abroad, mm-hmm. right? From mm-hmm. the beginning.
Yeah.
But then by Empire, he has his illusions dashed. And then in Return of the Jedi, he has become no longer naive. And you can even go on to Last Jedi, where he is a disillusioned old man. But there's much change in who that character is, even in just the original trilogy. Same for Leia. Leia was the feisty princess, iconic, right? Absolutely. Right. But then in Empire, she became more of a love interest and you learned about her softer side. And then in Return of the Jedi, she became not only a warrior, but also force sensitive and a fan and a part of a family. And so you see more character growth out of their iconic origins with Star Wars. Whereas with Star Trek, it may not be clear what their iconic status is, but once you know who they are, that's kind of who they are.
Yeah. And they stay there. And if you mess with them too much, that's very controversial as compared to messing with a Star Wars character. You can have a Star Wars character take a bit of a turn. Like you could argue, well, see, that's not exactly true, though, because George Lucas himself did it.
It's hard with Last Jedi because it was so removed that I think that's one of the reasons people reacted badly to Luke changing, because we didn't get to see him change.
Yeah, that's
true. But nobody really hated that Luke changed from Star Wars to Empire.
Right,
or
that's
from
true.
Empire to Return of the Jedi.
That's true. Those were natural arcs, I guess. Part of it is our idea of the characters is maybe different than the filmmakers when George Lucas changed who shot first, famously caused
Well, and also Last Jedi comes decades later, so we've had time to cement who we think that character is. Yeah.
Right. But I think that's probably true. Once in a while, Star Trek will reestablish the iconic status of a character is when you had Spock show up in TNG as a undercover Romulan dude, that changed a little bit about who he was. He was kind of rebelling. He was.
Yeah. It became a little more emotional, mm-hmm. at least for a Vulcan anyway.
Yeah. So some of that was going on, there's overt ways like giving Data an emotion chip, but that's a plot device to sort of test Data and then they'll take it out. You know, it's going to go away or they'll perfect it. It's not like it's going to stay crazy.
I've removed the emotion chip for now because it was unstable.
Right. So I don't know. There's obviously a lot of nuance here and there's no black and whites, but the Star Wars characters have always just struck me as their archetypes are clear from day one and therefore their emotional journeys are pretty clear and they work and you don't regret them. They make sense. One of my problems with the prequels is that nobody feels iconic right away. The only person that really does are the bad guys. They seem very iconic immediately, Darth Maul in particular. And we already had the icon that is Obi-Wan, so he was just kind of doing an impression of him. I don't want to besmirch his
Well, and he wasn't Obi-Wan yet.
Right.
He was still a Padawan in the first movie, and he's just coming into his own in the second and third movies.
Right.
It's not really till the end of Revenge of the Sith that you're supposed to really see the Obi-Wan that you see in A New Hope.
Right. And, you know, the new series with him as the focus is going to be interesting because it'll flesh out a bunch of stuff that we don't even know about. And
that's
exciting. So on the one hand, I think there's a iconic start to everything Star Wars, and in Star Trek, there is a mysterious start to a lot of things that flesh themselves out over time. And these characters become, you know, it takes a while for Riker to be cool. It's not right away. Like, it's very kind of 2D and
some
flimsy.
Some argue he never got there.
Maybe. You know what
not
I mean.
Me. Actually, I love Riker. Riker showed up in Picard. I was like, yes. Just be as Riker as you can possibly be. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and he was great.
Love Jonathan.
He was great to come back and do that. He just was perfect in that.
Because he's that is a type of person.
Yeah.
I think the people who don't like Riker just don't are like, I used to have a person like that in my life that I don't like. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, that's how it's funny, if I'm honest, it's how politics is for me. Sometimes if somebody I really vehemently disagree with, it's almost always because I had to work for somebody like them or something. And they remind me of them. And so it just puts me off like a stinky shirt. But
Okay. So I want to throw Captain Janeway out there. We haven't talked about Voyager too much. I've been rewatching Cheers since we did it on Current Geek Autopilot.
Yeah.
And there is an episode's arc where Kate Mulgrew plays a Boston politician who's dating Ted Danson.
That's right. I remember this. Yeah.
Who's dating Sam Malone. Mm-hmm. And in the first episode of Cheers that she appears in, she's got the top knot. Yeah. Now, this blew me away because I had always thought that the top knot was a thing that Star Trek decided to put on Kate Mulgrew to make her look futuristic, right?
Yeah.
Like, we'll have her have a funky hairstyle because she's a woman captain.
Yeah.
But I'm like, Maybe they just stole it from Cheers, or maybe that Kate Mulgrew just liked wearing her hair that way. Because for after the third season, you don't really see the top knot again. It's kind of a short bobbish mm-hmm. sort of cut, and that's how I think of Janeway.
Sure,
I don't think of her as with the top knot when I think of Voyager. But I guess the reason I brought that up is sort of this perception of the characters that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and the way we think about who they are. Can be affected by these little things that aren't even part of the plot.
Right. Riker's beard, her top knot.
Yes.
Which visor is Geordi wearing? Are these the suits that you pull down when you stand up, or is this the one piece? Is this the sexy suit for Deanna Troi, or is this the more moderate thing later? Those things, they in Star Trek especially, those really matter over there. For whatever reason they matter. I'm not entirely sure why they matter so much, but they do. Whereas yeah. in Star Trek or Star Wars rather, it's more like a complete costume change. It's like, oh, here's Luke in Return of the Jedi and he is in a full black Jedi looking jumpsuit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still just Luke.
Well, and Leia's, her side buns right. are of course iconic, as you say. but when she doesn't have them in Empire, I remember thinking, well, what about her hair? But you quickly become accustomed to the idea that like, Leia always has different hair.
Yeah.
It's just, just like real people always have different hairstyles from time to time.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, but, overall, my overall take is, the differences are what make both shows so great. And I don't want another, I don't mind other space operas and I don't mind other science fiction. Obviously I love science fiction. And you can do different things, Battlestar Galactica in its original form and in its newest form mm-hmm. in the 2000s are a great example of this. It's just a different take. And in some ways, there's some Star Wars in there. There's a little bit of science fiction in there. In fact, more science yeah. fiction in the second iteration than the first, but it's a fun.
That's a really good comparison because the original BSG is quite a bit more space opera because it's trying to be Star Wars.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were almost sued out of existence as a result.
By Lucasfilm. Whereas the reboot is free to be more scientific.
Right. And that's a really cool thing. And I'm glad it exists. And some argue that's one of the greatest science fiction shows of all time. I would argue that. But the truth is we have two undeniable champions in their realm, Star Wars and Star Trek. They just exist in
like
that
what
space.
You like about either one of them or both,
right? And be glad they exist and be glad that other things take great ideas from them, and you get things like The Expanse and you get things like
right
BSG or whatever, like those we live Firefly. In a rarefied time. It's amazing that we can have so much more of this and not just those two and still get a lot of original content. So yeah, I guess my big takeaway is don't get caught up in which one's better. Get caught up in which one's on.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Which one is on right now? And then go watch that and enjoy the hell
which
out of
which one should you watch? The one that's on. That's although right. kids today are like, what do you mean what's on? You pick it.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah, you choose. But yeah, they're laughing at us right now.
But if you don't like one or another, I'm fine. Don't watch it. But I think you could probably enjoy both.
Be like really me. Be like Tom. Like both. All right. Now, speaking of something new that's on or will be on soon. Tom, you want to give us the rundown for what we can expect from the new Current Geek coming soon?
Yeah. So this is the last Current Geek for a while, not forever, mm-hmm. but we need to take a break because we're overhauling Current Geek. Scott had the idea of using all this experience, the connections we've built up over the years, the production expertise we know to make a better Current Geek. Since we haven't been doing it live for a while, we're going to lean into that and up the production value. To that end, we're bringing in Hammond Chamberlain, who you might know from America's Next Top Podcaster, Beyond the Playlist, et cetera, and Rich Straffolino, who produces It's a Thing, hosts and produces Daily Tech Headlines, works for Gestalt IT. They're going to help us put together a great sounding, tight look and new looks into geeky topics that really help us understand our geeky selves. To that end, though, we need to wind down this current format for now. So this is the last of the old ways. If you need to jump, you're not going to get charged until we have a new episode, but we get it. Yeah. If you're like, nope, if you're not doing this kind, I'm Star Wars, not Star Trek. That's fine. But anybody who sticks around will get updates on the new show, sneak peeks at the episodes, and of course, be the first to get episode one when it's ready. So we'll be sharing probably, I think, Scott, we could probably start sharing some things, at least the title, maybe some episode topics next week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll put out some supplemental stuff and explain what we'll have even a better idea next week of what the first season is going to look like. But we can tell you that, for example, it's a season. That's how we're going to start. Mm-hmm. And it will be we have been vetting topics, the four of us, in kind of a roundtable style, pretty hardcore, and have come up with some really, really awesome stuff.
I really like what we've come up with. So, I'm so excited about all these topics.
There's things on the lineup. If you're a gamer, you're going to be stoked. If you are a tech enthusiast, you're going to be stoked. If you're really interested in special effects and film and TV and why we do certain things in these areas that we love so much and geek out about, that's what we're doing. And it's going to be, I can hear it playing in my head. Since we started talking about this, I know what this sounds like already. We just have to make them. And once we do, we'll get to share them with you guys, and we're pretty jazzed about it. So stick around. Just keep subbed on the feed. It'll show up in this feed once they're there, and all the supplemental stuff. Anything we do between seasons will show up here. Like, none of that has to change. You don't have to do any work on your end, in fact. You just have
It might have around. Extra words, but it'll be called Current Geek.
Yeah, it might be Current Geek something,
and then it might be Current Geek Duck Farts. It probably won't be that. It'll have something to distinguish that, like, hey, this is the new thing we were talking about, but it'll still be called Current Geek, so you know it's from us.
Yeah, we're keeping it simple that way, and we want you guys to be able to get it as soon as you want to get it. And I really think you're going to be impressed. Like I said, it's all of us, Tom and I in particular, have been wanting to do a more curated thing for a while. And now we get to do it here, and we get to do it with you. And we're very excited about your feedback and your thoughts and feelings. So keep that feedback and questions coming to currentgeek@gmail.com. And if you're already part of the Patreon, like Tom says, you don't get charged until there's an episode. So there's no charge for anything.
Yeah, there's no cost to wait.
Yeah, whatever level you're at, you don't have to do anything to wait. When it comes back, then things will be there. And if you're already there, great. We're going to change some of those rewards around so that it matches what the new content we're doing, and some of the cool things you're going to get will be more tuned to what we're actually putting out. So maybe some changes there, but we'll make sure to let you guys know both on the feed and on the site. So keep your eyes peeled over there at patreon.com/currentgeek, currentgeek.com for everything else. And I think that'll do it. Tom, any final... I should mention Legal Geeks celebrating the very end of Current Geek's current format, by the way, with a mega segment. This thing's like 5 minutes long. Never done them that long. And he's covering not one, not two, but three significant cases. These are decisions that were just recently handed down in lawsuits involving what video game creators can and cannot use in their games. Sounds like a thing a lot of our listeners will enjoy, so stick around for that. That's right after we're done talking here. Tom, parting thoughts, feelings, anything else you want to say before we...
Just a reminder, my novel Trigger is out. It's about Pilot X, a time traveler in a spaceship Verity, or timeship, rather, who are traveling the universe, trying to escape guilt, find pie and coffee, and save the universe for a second time. If it sounds like fun, go check it out, tomsnewbook.com. And if you have read it, which I know many of you have, thank you. Please leave a review on Amazon. Even if you didn't buy it from Amazon, because reviews on Amazon are one of the ways that it's really important to get discovered. So thank you for all of that. Tomsnewbook.com.
Absolutely. Grab it if you haven't. Check it out. And also, if you are into reading a free weekly comic about the goings on of the life of a guy named Fred and his sentient can of expired cream corn, then check out fredandcan.com. Turns out Fred and Can is a great commentary for these weird times we're living in. And you may want to check it out. I put that out every Monday. That's at fredandcan.com. I think that's going to do it for us. Currentgeek.com for all our details. And like I said, we'll keep you up to date over there and on the feed for the goings-on coming up here soon. Thank you all for being here for this format of the show. We're so excited to bring you the next one. Until we get there, for me, for Tom, for all of you, have a fantastic time. We'll see you then.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, in the final iteration of Current Geek before the relaunch, we do a mega segment that provides updates on three video game cases we have touched on before, as some major decisions were handed down in the past couple weeks. The first case was a copyright lawsuit over whether tattoo artists could sue Take-Two Interactive, the video game producer of the NBA 2K series, for including realistic tattoos and depictions of selected players, including LeBron James, in those video games. Similar cases in the past did not provide much precedent, as EA had settled a lawsuit over player tattoos on a video game's cover, and the case about reuse of Mike Tyson's face tattoo in the Hangover sequel had clearly different facts than this case. The copyright lawsuit was dismissed this month on several grounds. The judge ruled that Take-Two was protected by the fair use doctrine, and also that the fleeting shots of the tattoos in the game were too insignificant to make a valid claim of copyright infringement. Most importantly, the judge stated that the tattoo artist gave the players implied license to use those tattoos moving forward as part of their likenesses, and so the players could grant Take-Two the rights to show those tattoos as part of the players licensing their likenesses for the game. The primary takeaway is that the denial of such claims stops a Pandora's box of new liabilities from being opened against media companies like video game producers and TV and movie makers. The second case was the trademark infringement lawsuit brought by the maker of Humvee trucks against Activision Blizzard for unauthorized inclusion of that vehicle in Call of Duty series games. The relevant legal test to be applied in this context of expressive works like video games and movies is called the Rogers test, and it's a tough one for the automaker. It specifically requires that an accuser show that the trademark used is completely irrelevant to the work, or that the author is using it to explicitly mislead consumers. Only if an accuser can prove one of these prongs does the First Amendment right to free expression get overcome by trademark rights. As we predicted on a prior segment, the auto manufacturer could not prove either of these high burdens. The judge in this case rejected the trademark infringement claim, noting that Activision's use of Humvees in Call of Duty has artistic relevance by adding realism and lifelikeness to the game, with no misleading of consumers. The primary takeaway here is that real-life trademarks can be used in artistic works like video games, so long as the general rules of this legal test are followed, and they are relatively easy to follow in most circumstances. The final case for today was one of the lawsuits filed against Epic Games, makers of Fortnite, for signature dance moves included as an emote in that game. A saxophone player known for his viral videos sued for false designation of origin, false endorsement, and for violating his right of publicity. This was different from the copyright approach taken by others who had sued over Fortnite, including the makers of the Carlton Dance and the Floss Dance that we covered earlier. The judge in this case did not throw out all claims against the video game maker. As to the right of publicity accusations about improper use of name and likeness, these claims were deemed barred by First Amendment protections, because Epic transformed his image into its own creation by making the avatars their own independent creations. And while the false designation of origin claim was also doomed, because Supreme Court precedent states that claims over dance move creative expressions are better handled by copyright law, the false endorsement claim has been allowed to go on, because it does not deal with trademark likelihood of confusion, but instead, whether a false sense of the saxophone player's endorsement is created by Epic using these dance moves. So the case will go on in at least one regard. The primary takeaway for this case is that while Epic Games has successfully defended against copyright-style claims, the most natural ones to be brought according to legal precedent, this case could open a new legal avenue for potential liability of such video game makers to well-known or viral online personalities. The bottom line is, the legal world is still spinning despite a lot of court delays caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. It just happens to be that some of these most interesting video game cases are all coming to important decisions while we all have extra time to read about them and cover them. For the most part, video game creators are winning these battles, assuring the viability of their business plans and game development to continue. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
You know, it takes a while for Riker to be cool.